Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Come join us on this trip. No, more like journey. We're throwing out the script. We don't charge a penny.
You good?
Oh, I'm telling you, man, it has been such a bitch the last few weeks. Like, I apologize to everyone listening if I sound a little flu-y. I don't have the flu. I have a shit immune system that is super sensitive to temperature changes.
It's just called Rona.
No, honestly, I had COVID last year around this time. And I think that's what's fucked me this year. Because it fucked my already fucked immune system.
I did get Rona. I did. It was just before I went to Germany in 2021.
I came back from Cancun with COVID.
No, I didn't have COVID. We went to go get tested, but we mixed up the bags. And according to the NHS, like, because we get, like, we put my name, like, oh, I was like, oh, this is mine, this is mum's, and this is my dad's, and then they labelled them all. Mm-hmm. When actually, yeah. we're now convinced it was actually my mum who had it, because she actually did have it. I didn't have shit. And we spent like a week trying to phone the NHS, the COVID helpline, went back in between both of them. There was nothing set up for this this particular problem that we had. And I had to redo my whole holiday. Like, literally, yeah. Get my money back from my hotel, get my money back from my airplane, change it to the next week, explain to my friend why I had to, like, change the whole thing. And it's like, it just seems like there were so many like question marks. It's like, look, I do want to go. I'm not trying to find an excuse. Like, look, I've actually rebooked the airplane and the hotel. I'm coming next week. Just shit went down. I know it looks proper sus, mate. That's because it sounds proper sus, mate.
Proper sus, yeah.
The fuck, like, I mean, just before we get in, that was a thing that happened, wasn't it? Fucking, I'm not. COVID was real.
I mean, it's still a thing.
I know it's I know it's still a thing, but like.
But it's not. It's not as world shutting down level.
I feel like I'm owed a year and a half of my life back somehow.
Yeah, I think everyone does.
Yeah, I can't. I don't think I'm alone now. I definitely feel like I sort of we skipped.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy when you think about it too, because it's like, what did you do in that year besides hang at home and, well, I guess jerk off as much as you possibly could.
I was working on a script throughout most of it, and mm-hmm. when I wasn't working on the script, I was playing Warzone.
Yeah, I was
it got to the point where I was convinced Activision had a hand in, like, sort of some form of lockdown or COVID exploding, because I'm pretty sure COVID happened a week later, like, mm-hmm. Verdansk, Call of Duty Warzone dropped, and I was like, this seems convenient.
I jerked off so much it lost its luster.
It got wasn't there that article, like, the more you jerk off, like, the more your immune system, like, gets better. It's like some bullshit like that.
Lies. I can confirm that was all lies.
It's like everyone, like, there was all the memes of, like, so I'm indestructible. It's like Mr. Burns when he gets tested for everything. No, Mr. Burns, a small breeze could kill you. Indestructible, you say. Right.
It's a weird time, man. And it's like how. So, okay.
Oh, God.
Obviously, I just want to make this episode, we're talking about biopics.
Yes.
You know, our favorites, some of the best ones, and, you know, kind of our critiques and dislikes and of the genre as a whole.
We were going to try and do what we did last week and have five together, but when we kind of saw each other's choices, we're like, oh, we each have very separate tastes in biopics. So, you know how last week when we said we were going to, like, we've been restructuring the whole idea and the way we do lists and shit? So, we're going to restructure it again. Sebastian gets free, I get free, expect more lists like this, and if we change it again,
which is
bun you guys.
which is honestly hilarious to me, because, like, it's essentially we're going back to the way we were doing it.
Oh yeah, 100%. But, like, we're talking, like, yeah, and you know how we weren't going to talk about, like, shit in the news that was, like, mm-hmm. real world stuff, and then we came in today and started talking about COVID.
Yeah, but, like, but that's why I mentioned what we were talking about, because I'm curious as to, like, you know, you think about biopics about people from, like, this.
I know how we can segue COVID into biopics, by, like, the way. So,
like, how about, leave it
to me.
So, in, like, the biopic of your life,
mm.
how would you represent the COVID years?
Fuck. So. That's, for me, I don't want to say it's a lot harder for me, but
mm-hmm.
I had just been displaced from what I thought was the rest of my life. I'd literally just come home mm-hmm. from the better part of 4 years in LA. Like,
yeah.
I was like, here, now enjoy Christmas. Now enjoy your birthday. And it was like, okay, cool. It's end of January. I want to start working. Oh, there's this COVID thing. I go through all of February. I'm still thinking, what do I want to do? Do I want to sort of put myself out there in terms of the Birmingham scene? And then mm-hmm. March 20th, boom, stay indoors.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, cool. Like, I can start working on all these scripts. Did I? No. I thought of some ideas, but, like, it was so mentally fucking that I just mm-hmm. like I focused on one project with two other people, and we kind of, like, sort of fed off each other. Like, there was weeks where I was doing good, they weren't doing good, and we kind of, like, sort of swapped, and we kind of used the project as, like, a crutch, And I like the project will always mean so much for me for that. And the two people I worked with will always mean so much for me for that. But I think the way I would represent my time in COVID was, I don't know, man. Like, I felt like a big part of me, when I came home from LA, I mean, I don't know how many people know this, how many people told this to, I felt like a failure. I felt like I failed. I should have done everything in my power within those 4 years to stay. I'm financially stable enough. I feel like I'm talented enough. I'm smart enough. I could have. It got to a point where, like, I've had to admit to some people during my time in LA, you know, I was a bit of a good time seeker. There was, like, I feel like I knew before most people that my time was dated.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not gonna point people out, but, you know, everyone struggled in their own way, and, you know, I feel like you saw it. I struggled in February when I wasn't getting a lot of work. And I kind of snapped a little bit, and then I came back and I started focused on caretakers. I was like, look, if I'm not going to get work, I'm going to fucking make work, and I'm going to try my best. I came home from LA. I felt like a failure. I wanted to, like, sort of, okay, cool. If I want to get back to LA, I've got to nip that mentality in the butt. And I was like, sort of, Christmas kind of helped. Like, you know, you're surrounded by family, people who love you. Good food, good vibes, good movies, and then my birthday. It's always a good time around my birthday because my friends will all come together, and my friends were there for me quite a lot. I felt like I was ready, and then it just felt like the world was against me. Yeah, I feel like everyone struggled mentally through COVID. I'm not going to take that away from anyone. I can't. Like, that's so selfish of me. But my struggle was, I felt like my struggle was, like, for at least in the beginning of COVID, was doubled. Because I was one of those motherfuckers, oh, by July, it'll be fine. It's like, and then I saw that, like, E3 was cancelled. And that is in July. And I was like, oh, actually, maybe this is going to last quite a while.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was, you know, like, there was, like, a little, like, you know, I was trying to give myself a bit of hope. I was trying to bring myself back. I'm always good at bringing myself back. It's for over the past, you know, for the past couple of years, it's been difficult. You know, sometimes it's easier. Sometimes you don't realize. Sometimes you need that shotgun blast to the face to realize you've, like, oh crap, I need to change.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, no one needed the change that COVID brought.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Not at all.
What about you, man? How do you represent your COVID years?
Fuck, man, I don't know. It's crazy, you know? It was very much in the same boat as you, you know, coming into, like, the start of 2020, feeling like I was a failure, you know, having to move back home. And
because we had that fantastic year in 2019.
And I think, you know, I can honestly say that you and I were both very much, we were trying to enjoy this every second that we could.
Yeah.
And we were trying to enjoy the fact that we were living together. We were having all these great times. We have all these great fucking stories. And, you know, the flip of that is there's a possibility we might have spent too much time enjoying every second.
I think so, yeah, honestly.
And I've been thinking about that a lot recently, too, where it's like, you know, maybe if we had, like, set aside a couple of weeks where we both just, like, buckled down. It's like, hey, you know, we're going to sit down. We're going to, like, you know, look for proper jobs. And then, you know, maybe we can figure out how to But again, you know, it's, we're in an industry where finding a proper job is basically impossible.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a death sentence.
It's so difficult. So, you know, both of us, you know, changing mindsets, you know, if we're not gonna, like you said, you're not gonna find work, fuck it, we'll make work. but you know,
not everyone has the means to make work.
Yeah, and so that was also difficult. So for me, you know, coming home after the new year, trying to get myself into the mindset where it's like, okay, well, I'm at home. I feel like a failure. You know, I need to shift my thinking, and I did for a little bit. And you know, I was working with someone on and off for a little bit, and things were good, and it felt like things were kind of rolling in a good way. And mm-hmm. then, you know, just they didn't end up working out that way, and it's just how it is. And then, like, I guess you can only take feeling like a failure for so long. Whereas for me, because of, you know, I look at the way my life has been the last couple of years, and I don't get me wrong, I find myself extremely fortunate for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm living at home, and you know, stereotypically, you know, you're in your 30s, you're living at home. It's like, but right now, I don't have to worry about rent. I don't have to worry about bills. So it gives me the opportunity It gives me an opportunity to focus on the shit that, you know, will ultimately lead to something better.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think about that time during COVID, and what's crazy to me is I felt like I was more productive, more juiced up to go.
Yeah.
During COVID, as opposed to now. And I think it's because of that. The mindset for me was like, okay, you know, when COVID's over, I'm going to have all of this ready to go.
Yeah, yeah. We were sold this lie that, like, oh, there'll be so much push for content. But it seemed like, you know, if you didn't see it through COVID, I think most of the average entertainment enjoyer saw it with the strikes, that these companies will bend the rules. If it looks like there's a gap between A and B, they will force the bridge, whether mm-hmm. a bridge belongs there or not. They will force a bridge there, and if they can't build the bridge, they'll fucking build a dam miles away, stop the water to go through, and they'll just walk across. And that's, like, honestly, the content train never stopped through COVID. Not once.
Yeah.
You'll find more of a content stoppage because of what's just happened over the past 150 days. There'll be a point next year where everyone will be like, oh, where's the new season of this? Where's the new season of this? I thought we were supposed to get this. I thought we were supposed to get this. And it'll get to the point where it's like, I'm going to stop telling you about what happened this year for the effect to be felt next year. It's like everyone's complaining we should have had Dune. It's like, well, be happy that Dune has been delayed to some point next year, because...
And not shelved.
That's the only fucking movie we're going to have in, like, to a certain extent at one point. Mm-hmm. I hope these studios can sort of agree to a certain extent. It's like, okay, you have a few movies come out here, we'll take here, mm-hmm. then you'll take here. But it's not going to work like that. There'll definitely be weeks where there'll be nothing. And I think for Cineworld over here, the big cinema chain over here, it'll be a death sentence. I hope it has been someone's job to buy content, because COVID, sort of, there was moments in COVID where it's like, okay, it's go outside, we think. And the cinemas reopened, but there was nothing there. So what they did was they re-released classic movies. And honestly, I've really fucking enjoyed it. Both me and my cinema buddy over here, we agree, one of the best times we've had going to the cinema in recent memories. Because it's movies we never had the chance to see, because either we weren't born. One, movies we did see, but didn't have the chance to sort of really take in. Like, The Dark Knight was one of them. I was like, I remember seeing that in 2008 and thinking, fucking Batman, yeah! But I was like, fucking The Dark Knight in the big screen again, bro. But we saw Shawshank, we saw The Karate Kid, Terminator 2, The Dark Knight, Back to the Future, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, we were loving it, man.
No, we view that very differently. Like, I remember them doing stuff like that out here. and being, Jesus Christ, these fuckers are so desperate. And I mean, like, for me, at the height of COVID, the idea of going out to the movies to be around people was bottom of the list for me. Like, there was no way in hell. Like, I wasn't going to risk it. Like, no movie is worth it. No movie is worth the risk.
It was, there just was like, some screens, it was just me and my mate, and they came over to us, like, sir, like, they weren't American, but it's like, oi, mate, you still need your mask on, yeah? I was like, bro, are you afraid that I might infect all of these people? I was like, shut up. Like, what do you want me to do? Eat nachos through my mask? Fuck off.
Yeah, man. Like, I mean, if I was, okay, so if I was going to sum up my COVID experience, I would honestly sum it up as way more productive and promising than life is right now. Life feels right now.
Damn, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as we said earlier,
segue from that, motherfucker.
We were going to talk about biopics. I still have my segue. One of the things that happened through COVID, or towards the end of COVID, I would say, is, do you remember GameStonks?
Yep.
Diamond Hands, Dogecoin to the Moon, Dumb Money. Yep. Well,
yep.
That shit got itself a biopic. Now, if you haven't seen it, Dumb Money is very good. Very good. And there's a few connections to Dumb Money and a movie I'm going to talk about in my list. It was in Sebastian's list. I think it's in, when people think biopics, I think this is in, mate, like, if this isn't the movie you hear the most, it will be maybe the second most. Definitely in people's top three biopics movies of all time. It got shunned for Best Picture that year. I'm going to kick it off, Royal. Here we are, Social Network. Now, you're thinking, how do you, what were we doing?
Before we go on. We got to throw the break.
Oh, we got to go to a break.
When we come back, we're talking The Social Network.
When we come back, we're talking Social Network.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
All right. So, just before the break, we were talking about mine and Sebastian's experiences through COVID. It got very melancholy. That's not freeballing, but you know, you got to talk about that shit. We gotta be real sometimes. Especially when you're freeing those balls. Like, just, you know, a word from me and Sebastian, when you're freeing those balls, just, you know, give them motherfuckers a squeeze. Something don't feel right, you gotta tell a motherfucker. Right. Gotta be real. Sometimes it's an epididymis. Don't be feeling something and think, ah! Science be scary, man.
Science. Damn, science, you scary.
Science, put that on a t-shirt. Science be scary. Free ball in 2023. Damn, nature, you scary. And we were talking about how through COVID, there was game stonks. People made a lot of money saving what is GameStop in America from being totaled, scrapped by hedge fund billionaires. Basically, the people came together and realized, oh, actually, we do have an effect. But then Wall Street and governments were like, oh, actually, you know, making money.
We don't like that.
Yeah, we don't like that. It's like, oh, it's the idea of making money on the stocks, not actually making money on stocks. Yeah. When the little people actually start winning, and that's when question marks get raised. But that's neither here. That's neither here nor there. The movie's great. But the connection between that movie and the movie I'm going to talk about first, 2010's Social Network, is the book behind both movies were written by Ben Mezrich. Now, if you've seen The Social Network, the two characters are the Winklevoss twins, the Winklevi, Olympians.
The Winklevi.
The Winklevi. I love that quote from the movie. The problem with the Winklevi... the Winklevoss twins produced Dumb Money. Comes full circle.
Yep.
Yo, this biopic about us was really good. Maybe we can make them good. Because there's some biopics that are not good. There was one that came out, I think, last year about Princess Diana. And it was like, none of this actually happened. It's a case of, it may have.
It may.
What? Like, one, how dare you? Two, how dare you? Why is Gamora? Like... So, 2010, The Social Network came out. It's based on the book The Accidental Billionaires by Ben Mezrich. It's the beginning of Facebook and the story of Mark Zuckerberg through his final years in college and how basically he was the accidental billionaire. He was making all these websites. It was a case of you went through Harvard and it wasn't a case of using your education to find a job. It was using Harvard to make a startup and basically finish college early, make money, all that good shit.
Yeah.
The King's Speech shouldn't have won Best Picture for this year. When we talk about 2010, when we talk about biopics, you mention a King's Speech and about five people in a room go, oh, yeah. Unless you're like a 55-year-old white guy from fucking London and, you know, The King's Speech is apparently your best movie of all time. But those people wear pink polos and bomber jackets every day. We don't trust those people, Sebastian.
You know what's crazy?
Uh-huh.
Until you just said that, I had no idea The King's Speech came out in 2010.
Uh-huh. It beat The Social Network. I actually had a friend in
Zero clue that fucking movie came out that year.
But it's not actually a friend. Like, I had someone who I knew in my acting class, and they were like, oh, I hope Social Network doesn't win Best Picture. It was so boring. I was like, get the fuck out of this class. Bye-bye. Because, like, the acting was phenomenal. What, like, David Fincher just knows how to get performances out of actors. And if, like, I think Jesse Eisenberg is, like, on the spectrum himself, the way, like, the same way Mark Zuckerberg is. They're like, they're articulate, but it's a case of, like, you can, like, conversations will take tangents, like, that kind of thing. You know, when you're talking to someone's like, There's a lack of concentration there. If you're not talking about something they're directly involved in or know about, you'll lose them, and then it's over for you, Brev. So I think that was a good way for Jesse Eisenberg to connect to the character Mark Zuckerberg. You see it perfectly is when he's being deposed for the Winklevoss, and he's like, it's raining outside, And it's like, you don't think I deserve your full attention? No, the offices back at Facebook deserve my full attention. If your clients want to stand on my shoulders and call themselves tall, they have every right to do so. That, like, when I was an actor, I was like, that shit, that all those moments for the Winklevoss, like, deposition blew me away. And then you get Andrew Garfield at the end as Eduardo Saverin.
Yep.
Holy shit. As much as a movie about him as it is about Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
And I think that's just how David Fincher works. The way the story just flows between all the characters and all the scenes, like, is the coming of age, like the coming of age aspect of it as well, because they are still kids. Mm-hmm. This whole thing was by accident. The whole thing started writing an equation on a window. I don't know if that's true. If it is, good Lord. But all the, I think, and it all come, like, the way David, like, I think David Fincher was so able to direct such a script was because Aaron Sorkin gave such a good script.
I was going to say, like, we can't be sleeping.
And, like, it literally just came to me, was like, holy shit, as good as David Fincher is, I think it's a case of David Fincher plus Aaron Sorkin equals gold.
Because you think, I was watching this thing about biopics, you know, prepping for this, and they had a bit where they had Sorkin kind of talking about his approach to writing The Social Network, and it was really interesting because he was like, you know, he was approaching it in the way that Zuckerberg as a character is very much an anti-hero.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and the way he does things, the way he carries himself and all that stuff. So the way he approached it, you know, you can't be judgmental. You can't put your own thing on, you know, this guy thinks he's doing right.
Mm-hmm.
Why does he think he's doing right? You know, all this stuff. And it's really interesting because, like, you know, we were talking about it just before we hopped on, that there's so many biopics, and, like, it seems to be, you know, it's very easy go to genre for people.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the, like, The Social Network is one of those movies that, like, takes the concept of the biopic and really digs its heels into it in the best possible way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fincher's directing, Sorkin's writing, the performances, and I, you know, it's just, why this didn't win, I'll never know.
Why Jesse Eisenberg didn't win Best Actor, why it didn't win, like, it won Best Writing. I think it may have won Best Director, or maybe Tom Hooper won Best Director for King's Speech. I'm not too sure. I know I personally love a biopic about something I know, or something I think I know something about, and then it's like, expand my knowledge. Whether it's wrong, whether it's right, because, like, some people be like, oh, this never actually happened. But I was like, yeah, but in the same way that we just shat on, like, Princess Diana, the whole movie was this may have happened. I like the, like, give me real, but then fill it in with some organic goodness.
Okay, so it won the Oscar for Best Writing Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah, yep.
Achievement, it won Best Editing.
Best Editing, yeah.
And it also won Best Music for Motion Pictures.
Yeah, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Because holy shit, I'm not about to talk about David Fincher's movies and not mention his use of Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Because I'm pretty sure it's since Fight Club. He's David Fincher is one of those. He's like Christopher Nolan. Why am I going to work with anyone else when I know how good these guys are and how well we feed off each other? Like, you know, you see some people, they're always, like, changing who they work with. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Like, kind of like the Marvel way of doing things. Like, the best we got out of Marvel ever was the continuation of Joe and Anthony Russo.
Yep.
Through, like, from Winter Soldier through to Endgame for, like, you know, the big bombastic movies.
The big ones, but
where is that now? Like, they tried to give us that with Shang-Chi going to Shang-Chi 2 and Kang, but I can't remember the guy's name, but he's pulled out of Kang Dynasty now to focus on Shang-Chi too.
Yeah.
You get this sense of just all round completeness for Social Network, and it's got to the point now where if Edgar Wright can get the whole crew back, well, the whole casting, mm-hmm. the whole cast team back for Scott Pilgrim Takes Off on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Surely some like David Fincher can get Aaron Sorkin, Jesse Eisenberg back for the Social Network too. We need it. Like you have this story that's like glorifies Facebook. Now we need the story that just burns it to the fucking ground.
Yeah. Honestly, I personally want to see that, because then you have, thinking of it from like a writing character perspective, you have the arc of, if in the Social Network Mark Zuckerberg is an anti-hero, like you want to see how he becomes just the full-on villain.
Oh, 100%
in the Social Network while still believing
in
he's the hero.
It's weird for me to say, but like kind of like Hitler.
No villain will ever think that
Kenneth Branagh will tell you that in acting, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like he thinks he's doing the right thing.
If I've offended
anyone there, but like, you know, a lot of people hate Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah. Just going off of, you know, thinking you're doing the right thing, I want to bring up my first pick.
Yeah.
It's definitely a departure in terms of, it's obviously still a biopic, but it's very different. It is a musical biopic.
Mm.
And it's pretty recent. It came out back in 2021.
Oh, during COVID.
So the movie is Tick, Tick, Boom.
Ah, yes. Both of our movies star Andrew Garfield.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And this one, you know, Tick, Tick, Boom puts him right front and center. And it is the directorial debut of Lin-Manuel Miranda. And
Tick, Tick, Boom, it
focuses on the life of Jonathan Larson. And if you don't know Jonathan Larson is the guy who wrote
Rent. Yep.
Yeah. And so the story behind him is he wrote Rent. He got picked up, and obviously it's became huge, but he passed away right before Rent had its big like opening performance.
No.
And in the movie, though, it focuses on the musical he wrote before he wrote Rent. You know, the one that kind of got people to look at him. So for me, the reason that I've picked this is because when I saw the movie, it's this guy on the verge of turning 30 years old. And, you know, he's this playwright, and he wants to, you know, he's trying to make his dream come true. And I literally saw this movie before, like a week or so before I went to the UK for my 30th. And there was just so many aspects that I connected with on this guy. You know, the music.
Wait, so the movie really came out in 2021, but you didn't see it till 2022. Because you came to the UK in 2020. You came to the UK last year, bro.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Girl! it was just one of the... Because it was, I think, I'm pretty sure it was...
It's a Netflix release.
Theaters? Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see it till just before. And I only even saw it on a whim. I was like... Fuck it, you know, just stuck it on and I watched it, and I was like, "Fuck me, man!" That was
I love those movies you watch. It's like everyone's that's how I was with Squid Game. There was like, even people I play games with, like we do is play games, and I was like, "Oh, you guys been watching Squid Game?" I was like, okay, even these motherfuckers have mentioned it now. Maybe I need to get on this shit. And I was like,
yeah, take a look at
it. Eateth my words, this was it was amazing. So I love those kind of like fresh organic finds. So yeah, kudos, dude.
And And you know, like I said, the music really spoke to me. Andrew's performance and the whole thing.
We are Andrew Garfield stans, I think.
I think so. And the man is fantastic. So I'm not mad at that. And then you watch him in this movie, and like, you know, you seeing this creative guy basically ruin his life to try to achieve this dream impossible fucking dream that everyone keeps reminding him is impossible.
Yeah.
You know, his relationships suffer, both, you know, romantically and like with friendships and stuff. And like, you know, people trying to get him to like, you know, buckle down and, you know, become an adult. You know, you're going to be 30, dude. Yeah. And you're still doing this. You're not making any money. And, you know, you're in New York. It's like, that's great. You're in New York, but you can barely afford to live there, man.
Yeah.
Like, I understand, you know, wanting to do this because it's your dream, it's your passion, and that's fine. But dreams and passions aren't going to pay the fucking bills, especially in New York City, man. The whole city's built on the fucking bones of people's dreams and passions.
Yep.
And like watching this as I'm turning 30, I was like, fuck. I should have seen it the year before.
Oh no.
I probably would have been like, man, that's crazy. But like watching it a week or so before I'm turning 30, I'm like, dude, my timing is so terrible. Yeah, fuck.
It's all over for me. I want to get off the train.
No.
I didn't even get,
like, what have I done?
Don't even remember getting a ticket. I want to get off.
It's a great movie, and let you know, you see it, you, for a directorial debut, I think Lin-Manuel did really well.
Directorial debut in terms of like
feature films.
He'd already done Hamilton at this point on Broadway.
Yeah.
And that is directing, like directing Broadway, directing West End is like
huge.
There's so much more. I don't want to say there's so much more to it than film, but stage is a different animal.
So his feature film directorial debut, I felt like, and I think it's because he knew the guy, so he had that, he already had like that relationship with Jonathan Larson, and he knew how to tell the story without, you know, making it seem. Because it's a tragic story, but there's still a lot of heart and light. You get Larson's passion through the film, and you know, you don't feel sorry for him. You want this guy to succeed.
Yeah,
and I think that's for a biopic to nail that is difficult, especially because, you know, real person, you know more or less how their life turns out. But when you're watching it, you're like, no, I want this guy to win. I want this guy to achieve his dream, and you know. When the reality hits, you're like, ah, fuck.
And, well, Rent now is one of the greatest musicals of all time. When Andrew Lloyd Webber says that about a musical, you know you've got a good musical. And it's definitely one that, like, when you've got, like, a young group of kids that are, like, you have a lot of characters in it. Like, say if I'm teaching a class and I, like, you should be able to read... you should be able to read a class well enough. It's like, okay, these guys connect a lot more to like the classical stuff. So if I'm going to do a musical, we'll do a rendition of Les Mis or Oliver. But if these guys are very like sort of, you know, there's a lot of characters, there's a lot of separation. They're all intertwining by fucking each other. There's a lot of, you know, you can tell there's drugs, you can tell there's drinking. I would give them Rent. You know, there would definitely be some stories and journeys of self-discovery. That's the beauty of each of the characters, and you know, the beauty of Rent. I've not seen the documentary, but I've done my research into Rent. Your boy went through many years of actor training in England. Lives a lot of years of musical theatre in there. So, yeah. Maybe I should see this movie as well and sort of give myself some of that knowledge. Where am I gonna go to next?
So I know we were talking about, like, you know, the goal is to kind of keep these episodes under an hour.
Yeah.
So
we got 20 minutes.
I think one more. Yeah. So I think we got time. We got time for one more.
One more each. So if we're doing one,
I don't know if we have enough time for one more each. I think we have time for one more.
One more? Holy shit.
Just because of how we've been going.
Yeah.
I'm honestly not mad at it, because I feel like these have been going really good.
Okay.
So we could turn this into a two-parter. We could come back next week with some more. I didn't mean to spring that on you, dude, but
I don't know which one we should choose.
You know what sucks is, like, you were like, I'm going to try not to waffle, and I put you in a waffling position.
You did put me in a waffling position. Sorry. But we spoke, we spoke about COVID. We couldn't cut that short. And, you know, these biopics are just so great. This episode was your choice, dude. You pick, man.
All right, I will pick. And I'm going to pick from your list, actually.
Oh, shit.
Because it is one of my favorite movies of all fucking time. And we are going to end with Scorsese. We are going to end with Goodfellas. Let's talk Goodfellas.
So you know how I said we were going to pick five? And then I was like, oh, can you change yours to three? I removed two of mine whilst we were talking. I removed Goodfellas. I removed Ray.
Get the fuck out of here.
I was gonna go with Moneyball and stay out of Compton. I've just had to undo my deletions of my information for Goodfellas. So Goodfellas, 1990, Scorsese. Based on The Wise Guy by Nicholas Pileggi. The Story of Henry Hill.
Oh, that's so fucking funny.
But no, yeah, honest, like, yeah, we before we started recording, we mentioned, like, just how, like, you don't have David Fincher, you don't have Lin-Manuel Miranda in terms of being able to do biopics without the king. Come on. Martin fucking Scorsese, bro. The king of the three-hour movie.
Fucking Scorsese.
Like, other directors wish they could direct a three-hour movie that could, like, to a point where you're not watching your phone, you're not watching, you know, you're not looking at your watch, you're just sat down, you're engrossed. It's like you get all the information, you get all the nitty-gritties.
Mm-hmm.
And then, come on, Ray LaFucking-Ota, bro. This goddamn man. Ever since he could remember, he wanted to be a gangster. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm. just the opening of the movie, man, and it's the push in, the music underneath. Not just the push in,
to, like, the long shot, like the 10-minute long shot.
Yeah,
like. Mm-hmm. Where do you think Paul Thomas Anderson got the fucking idea for Boogie Nights from?
Yep.
Because he literally shot for shot remade that son bitch.
Exactly. Oh, dude.
Sam Mendes tried to do the whole hold my beer, but it's like, look, you know, yeah, you can do a whole movie, but this 10 minutes, bro, is better than your 2 hours, son bitch. Like,
it's like, who's getting reproduced every chance? Who's gonna have filmmaking students for the rest of their fucking lives trying to recreate this? Fuck you, Sam Mendes.
Yeah, 100%. Fucking out. Scorsese just knows how to bring a story to life, man. And especially, like, some of his other big biopics, Casino, Killers of the Flower Moon that just came out, and then The Big Un on your list. Mm-hmm. It was The Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street. He's also done The Aviator.
The Aviator.
Raging Bull.
Holy shit.
This man loves biopics. And I can see, like, you think about the people that he picks, it's like, it's extremely interesting. Like, I feel like for this one, obviously Henry Hill, very close to this guy's heart. You know, he grew up, he's made it very clear, like, he grew up around this life.
Mm-hmm.
you know, in New York, and, you know, being Italian in New York, being surrounded by this kind of stuff. So it's like, you, there's an authenticity that he brings to Goodfellas that I don't know many other directors would be able to do. I mean, I imagine they could, you know, they do their best.
Yeah.
But he the way he connects with the character and the way he tells the stories. And like, I remember watching an interview with him talking about, like, he didn't really want to do Goodfellas. Like, he didn't want to do another, you know, gangster mob movie, mm-hmm. but, you know, as much as he doesn't want to be pigeonholed as that, the man is the king.
Yeah.
You give this man a script that involves gangsters and the mob and all of this stuff, and he's going to turn around and give you one of the best movies of all fucking time.
Yep. Without question. Make you sympathize with characters that you shouldn't sympathize for. Mm-hmm. Make you understand, like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm annoyed that, like, there was that John Travolta Gotti movie a couple of years ago, and I imagine someone has tried to convince Scorsese to do a John Gotti movie, but I imagine he just turns around and says it's too close to Goodfellas. Like, literally,
yeah,
it would either, like, John Gotti would be a prequel to Goodfellas, pretty much. Because
do you know who directed Gotti?
Nah.
Kevin Connolly. Fucking E from Entourage.
E directed from the Entourage? John Travolta. Oh, wow.
Directed the John Travolta Gotti movie.
Fuck me. Yeah, he was as good as directing as he was good as producing in the series. Not so good. But it's like Sammy. Is it? It's not Danny DeVito. Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci's character, Sammy.
Mm-hmm.
Was part of John Gotti's crew.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was
fucking A.
Yeah. I think you said, like, it's hard to find someone as connected to a story. One of my other choices was Straight Outta Compton. F. Mm-hmm. Gary Gray was part of the, like, he wasn't. Like, he doesn't put himself into the movie, but he was there. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, he, you know, he grew up with NWA, Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, and all them lot. I think that's why he was able to, like, I don't know. In recent memory, since, like, certain, like, say if you have, like, a wave in terms of, like, things work, you've got, you know, let's start with Goodfellas. Let's mm-hmm. go. Let's go to The Social Network. In recent memory, best documentary in terms of just all out information that you get. I know Eazy-E's mm-hmm. daughter has a lot of sort of question marks about the way Eazy-E is portrayed in Social Network. Not Social Network, Straight Outta Compton. But so Straight Outta Compton, mm-hmm. like, I didn't know what I was getting in for. The way you knew you didn't know what you were getting in for in Tick, Tick, Boom. I saw this some bitch, mm-hmm. like, day one cinemas, IMAX. Oh.
Yeah.
But we're going to finish recording tonight. Fuck it. I'm going to go upstairs. I'm going to watch me Straight Outta Compton.
You know, it's one of my brother's favorite movies. He watched it once, and he's become obsessed. And it's crazy that... You know, I actually kind of love that we're basically ending on Straight Outta Compton instead of Goodfellas. There's in Compton, they're renaming a street, one of the streets, after Eazy-E. It's going to be Easy Street.
Cool.
Right now we're on Easy Street.
Yeah. and you know, it's crazy to me. Like, okay, so just, you know, talking about Straight Outta Compton, great movie, mm-hmm. great story, great performances,
great soundtrack.
For me. The soundtrack is phenomenal, but for me, I think what does it for me is, like, it's a movie about a group of guys who grew up not 10-15 minutes from where I live.
Yeah.
And revolutionized an entire music genre and revolutionized the music industry.
I remember the first time I met you, that first week we met, not even the first week we, mm-hmm. like, it was the first week we met. I was like, bro, you want to go out? You want to go party? And, like, we drove from your house to Long Beach. And, like, you stopped and was like, bro, you know where we are right now? And you were like Compton, and I was like, I put my ass down because I was like, bro, I'm white.
I'm
trying to live, bro. Shit, like
you were so scared.
Do you have to drive so close to the petrol station? Damn. Like,
and it's one of those things, you know, man. I remember that very, very distinctly. Like there were a lot of times when we were like driving around when. You know, you'd see certain areas and I the way your body language would give not fear, but you're like a little bit of trepidation, you know, like, should we be driving around here? Is it safe to be driving around here? And I'm driving around with the most carefree look on my fucking face.
I have a good story how I learned from you about this. I have a great story, mm-hmm. like how I changed from basically September 2016 to January 2017. We were, me and some friends, it was one of our final days, they had, like, some friends came over from mm-hmm. England to see me for my birthday in 2017. And I think it was, like, we'd come home from Vegas, and we'd like, oh, what do you want to do, final day kind of thing. We went to go, what's the USS, is it USS Iowa that's parked in Long Beach?
Is it
USS so? Indianapolis?
It starts with an I.
So either Iowa or Indianapolis. One of them two motherfuckers. And it's the one that I think it's the one that Nicolas Cage has the story about where it got like mm-hmm. it got downed, but then they like the crew jumped into the sea and then they got hunted by sharks. Yeah. Like mm-hmm. it was like one of like a crazy story that became even crazier. But like if you go like 20 minutes away, like down the road to, like from that yeah that's a part of Long Beach where you don't want to be in pretty much
yeah
like but we found a bar
like unless you grew up there
we found a bar there was a pool table, the drinks were cheap, the music was flowing, like me and my boys, we just walked in, we were confident. I was like, boys, you know if you go in there looking scared, They're gonna treat you like
treat
bitches.
You like you're scared.
But you go yeah. in, you put your money down, you tip for your beer, you put some money into the mm-hmm. pool table, you speak when spoken to, you make conversation, yeah. and it's a good time. We had a friend that came to join us. Immediately was like, bros, we can't be here. Like, you know, I know another bar, like, you know, down the road. I was like, bro, what the hell's wrong with this bar? And we went to another bar where like there was no pool table. It was way too busy, and the beers yeah. were like five times as more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, me and Bobby, we had on the podcast one time. We speak about this story often, yeah. where we're like, "Yo, that mm-hmm. one place we were in Long Beach, like, yeah, that was pretty sick, man." It was like and you know what? This other like the guy that made us move, conservative politician, my guy. There it is. He actually he had to mark himself safe on January 6th a couple of years ago. Fucking I remember seeing that on Facebook, like it's like, yo, marked safe from the Capitol Hill riots. I was like, fuck, because like kudos to him, like,
yeah,
jogging politics, went to the big house.
mm-hmm.
So good for you, dude.
Nah, that's fucking
you know,
it's crazy because like I remember like early on and I was hanging out essentially like what I remember one of the big things that I wanted to do was like just to show the two different LAs because you know obviously you know you
if you like
the aspiration you, when you come to LA you have an image
you did that when we went like, to the Hollywood Boulevard. And it's like, oh, yeah. So, yeah, you know, this is where we hold the Oscars. This is where some bars are, you know, the Dave and Buster's, all that kind of shit. And then we walked like 50 paces down the street. Ah, holy shit, mm-hmm. it's like hell. mm-hmm. Just past the Scientology mm-hmm. building, boom.
Yep.
There's the different LA in earshot.
You know, and it's what's crazy is like you bring that back to like straight out of Compton. It's for me the way Compton and Long Beach and all of these areas are portrayed is so real. Like for me, because that's my LA. Mm. That's the LA I grew up
yeah,
in.
Yeah.
I will watch TV shows set in LA and be like, where?
Like you?
Where'd that be? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. Depiction of LA, dog shit.
It is a dog shit representation, but it is a true representation because there are areas like that and there are people like that. And most of those fecal people are fucking transplants who consider. Oh, I've lived in LA for 5-10 years. Yeah, I'm from LA. No, I'm day one, motherfucker. I was born here. I'm from LA.
I think that's the power, like, just the this wind it up a couple of minutes. That's the power of biopics, man. Show the people a bit of real. Give them subvert people's knowledge. You think you know this story? Fuck you. You think you know this area?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you. You think you know this character because you've seen some articles? Fuck you. And I think that's
you
like
think you that, know me? Fuck you.
And I think that's like it's the power of like a good movie that can do it in 3 hours. And I think, you know, Netflix, you know, I feel like a little bit of me is like, yo, you know, some of your original content is pretty whack. Mm-hmm. But you do, Netflix, they nail from time to time some of their free episode biopics, like bio docu series. But like they do good. Give me some information, man. Tell me something I don't know. Like Big Jewel. I remember 2017, 2018 being in America, having that like that pandemic almost of like kids buying electronic vapes, and then like round about summer 2019, they were nowhere to be found. And I was like, I knew about it. I knew about Jewel, but now I know the names. Now I know the story because of a good docuseries. I'm watching Fall of the House of Usher with my dad and my mum.
Yeah.
And like, my dad's like, oh, this is mad. I was like, you do realize they've got the whole opioid crisis story of this from OxyContin in America. And my dad just looked at me blank, bro. I was like, dude, a computer, like, you know, you buy your computer, like, you know, maybe stop playing Sudoku like a million times a day and to get yourself some knowledge. There's people out there that like, I don't know. Like I just have this, like my mum nails it completely. I just have a thirst for knowledge. You know, Dope Sick that explore OxyContin, mm-hmm. Painkillers that explores it. And then even the new movie on Netflix, Pain Hustlers, that sort of is about the next level OxyContin, which is fentanyl. You know, we've mm-hmm. gone from meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
You know, there's a movie with Jake Gyllenhaal and Anne Hathaway, Love and Other Drugs. I don't know if you've seen it.
No, I haven't, but it's been on my list for a while, actually. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, the only reason I bring it up is because Gyllenhaal plays a pharmaceutical rep, and it's like it's set just at like the brink of the explosion of Viagra.
Damn.
And like it's an interesting movie, but you know, like you said, I think there's so many of these of stories and biopics that almost, for the most part, slip under the radar, don't really get told. And what I think biopics do is give people the opportunity to learn about these things and to learn about people that you never really would have gotten to know. Obviously, you know, there's some dramatic liberties taken, and you know, you can. You know, Rocket Man takes a lot of creative liberties with how the story is told.
Characters, but at the end scenes, dramatized for the screen.
But at the end of the day, the heart and soul of the person, if it's done well, is captured as honestly as it possibly can You have a great biopic. There's so many of them, and it was so difficult for us to fucking narrow this shit down. But we did, and I think you know, we talked about some really great ones. There's still so many we can talk about, and who knows, maybe we'll do a part two. But
I like how we, like, I think we went from COVID to biopics in the weirdest way. We were meant to be like, we were meant to talk about Ridley Scott and Napoleon coming out this week. And how, like, Ridley Scott's just, like, he's handling it poorly. I just think if you haven't seen, he's being a bit of a dick. And I'm seeing the movie, and I was excited, but now I'm not. But I'll let you know how. We'll come back next week. I'll let you know how it was.
Fingers crossed. Hopefully it's a good one. I imagine it's going to be a long one.
I'm more looking forward to Thanksgiving. I'm seeing that this week too. Give me Eli Roth.
I'm having Thanksgiving this week.
You're having Thanksgiving this week.
I was like, you said I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving. I was like, wait, y'all don't all the movie.
The movie. All right, you listeners.
Freeballers?
We're calling them our listeners freeballers.
We're calling them freeballers.
We're calling them freeballers. All right, you freeballers.
There you go.
You've better ball freely.
You know what? I say freeballers, and I'm just imagining all of our listeners at pickup games shooting baskets and
just bouncing around on their big testicles.
Fucking South Park status, bro. All right, everyone. Remember to like, rate, share, comment. You know, what are your favorite biopics? Do you like biopics? Do you hate biopics? Let us know. We want to hear it all.
Master got me working.
All right, everyone. Take it easy.
On this trip, now all my dreams are going out the script.
Come on, man, come join us on a trip.
I'm sorry.
Now we're throwing out the script.
I hope you don't charge a penny.
I hear the weekend's calling. Now it's time to start. Free ball.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.